I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Welcome to Radio Times. Speaking yesterday at the White House, President Trump was flanked by families who he said had been victimized by the Affordable Care Act, and he called the Obama administration health care plan a big, fat, ugly lie. A nightmare. It's broken, he said. It's collapsing. It's gone. The president criticized the Democrats for refusing to help the Republicans repeal and replace Obamacare, calling them obstructionists. Of course, no Republican voted for the ACA 7 years ago. And he called out Republicans to begin debate on the Senate health care plan today.
Every Republican running for office promised immediate relief from this disastrous law. We as a party must fulfill that solemn promise to the voters of this country to repeal and replace what they've been saying for the last 7 years. But so far, Senate Republicans have not done their job in ending the Obamacare nightmare. They now have a chance, however, to hopefully fix what has been so badly broken for such a long time, and that is through replacement of a horrible disaster known as Obamacare.
The president joked, or perhaps threatened last night, he would fire Health and Human Services Secretary Tom Price if the Senate didn't pass the health care bill. Now, Senator John McCain, who was just diagnosed with brain cancer, is flying in today for the vote. And interestingly, former House Speaker John Boehner said last week that repealing and replacing the Affordable Care Act is not going to happen because it's too late and Americans have gotten used to the benefits. Well, today in Radio Times, healthcare politics and policies. Joining us is Zeke Emanuel. He's chair of the Medical Ethics and Health Policy at the University of Pennsylvania, one of the architects of the Affordable Care Act. He's got a new book. It's called Prescription for the Future, the 12 Transformational Practices of Highly Effective Medical Organizations. Zeke Emanuel, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Great to be here from Missouri.
And joining us from Michigan is Jonathan Cohn. He's senior national correspondent for the Huffington Post, where he covers healthcare, social welfare, and politics. Wrote a book a couple of years ago called Sick. Joining us from Michigan Radio, Jonathan Cohn, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Oh, thank you for having me on the show.
You're welcome. Jonathan, let me begin with you. Why is Mitch McConnell, Senate Majority Leader, why is he pushing so hard for a vote today?
I think he is pushing hard for a vote today because time is the enemy of repeal. The theme, what we have seen from the very beginning, is a realization by Republican leaders that what they have promised to do for the last few years, again, not just repeal the Affordable Care Act, but replace it with a system that would give everybody health care and lower deductibles and solve all of the solve all of the problems with the Affordable Care Act while leaving all the good parts in place, you know, protecting pre-existing conditions. All of those promises are wildly inconsistent with the actual plans they are putting forward, which would, as we know, lead to millions of people losing health insurance. And even for people who have coverage, their deductibles would tend to be higher. People with pre-existing conditions would lose the guarantee they have. And the longer this debate is going on, the more those contradictions become clear. He is trying to ram this through. President Trump is trying to ram this through in the hopes that if they do it quickly enough, there won't be enough scrutiny, there won't be enough backlash, and they can somehow squeeze it through the Senate before basically everybody wakes up to what's going on.
But to quote a former Secretary of State, if you break it, do you then own it, Jonathan?
I think they do. And I should say, I mean, if you talk to Republican strategists, you talk to members of Congress who are voting for this, and you get, you know, and candidly, the political calculation they all make is, look, we can't not do this. We've promised for so many years. And, you know, that would be the worst political outcome. And look, if they don't, you know, they did. They spent 7 years promising repeal. If they don't repeal, it's not going to look great, particularly to their own supporters. I think they have no idea, though, of what the trouble they are buying for themselves. They are going to not just own the healthcare system as a whole, but they are going to be responsible for a bunch of changes that people are going to see and people are not going to like. People are going to notice when their health insurance goes away. They're going to notice when their premiums go up, when their deductibles go up. And they're going to notice that, you know, all these problems that were supposed to get fixed don't actually get better. I mean, there are going to be people who are better off for sure. There always are. But the number of people adversely affected by these plans is going to be huge. A lot of them are going to be Republican voters. A lot of them are going to be Trump supporters. And Republican lawmakers who think that no one's going to mind, that they're not going to be responsible for this, I think they're kidding themselves.
Zeke, let me get you in on the conversation. As one of the architects of the Affordable Care Act, it has its critics. And you can certainly do criticism by anecdote and come up with any criticism that you want. But it is clear that something like 40 counties in Indiana, Nevada, Ohio are at risk of having no insurers starting next year. If you could roll back the clock 7 years to rewrite or somehow fix the Affordable Care Act with, of course, the advantage of knowing what you know now, what would you do?
Well, first of all, let's be serious. No one puts in place a major policy and then walks away from it and expects it to go without additional reforms, tweaks, and changes. Any business that made a major strategic change would have multiple tweaks and changes and revisions as it goes along. We just haven't been able to do that to the Affordable Care Act because of Republican intransigence on it. And I think it's fair to say, to the extent that there have been any reforms, like the Marco Rubio reform, they've been undermining of the Affordable Care Act. Let's remember there are three very simple modifications and repairs that need to be done that stabilize and address the problems that you've identified. The first one is that you guarantee the cost-sharing subsidies. These are payments for people who are earning under $60,000 or $70,000 as a family to help them with the deductibles and co-pays. If you don't do that, insurance companies will raise their rates to cover those payments. We've seen that. And actually, if you guarantee the cost-sharing subsidies, you probably can bring premiums down probably 7 to 10%. Second thing we need to do is we do need to get those that reinsurance and risk corridors in place that Marco Rubio took away after the exchanges started. That, again, guarantees insurance companies if they get an adverse group of patients sicker than normal that they would be compensated partially for that. And that will, again, bring premiums down and help stabilize the market. Third thing you need to do is to help redraw the borders where insurance companies actually bid so that they are required to cover rural counties, most of those uncovered or covered with only one insurance company, are rural counties. Merge them with urban areas that, like they do in California, and you can get those covered. There are a few other changes. More targeted advertising would help. My colleagues at the Center for American Progress have suggested if you go into an uncovered county or a county with only one other insurer, that insurance company gets relief in that state for their tax, the insurance company tax, as part of the Affordable Care Act. That will incentivize insurance companies to go into these uncovered counties. These are not major structural changes. They're tweaks to the bill, and they all will have a positive effect of ensuring that there are no uncovered counties, increasing the competition, and lowering the premiums. These also happen to be very bipartisan reforms. There are conservative health policy experts who've endorsed these reforms. I think these are the kind of thing Lamar Alexander would do, as he has suggested in the Senate. He's senator from Tennessee. That he would do to make sure that the Affordable Care Act continue and the exchanges work. Let me just say for the listeners, you know, Standard & Poor's, who doesn't have a political dog in this fight, looked at the exchanges and said, overall, the exchanges are stable. They're here to stay. That doesn't mean there aren't particular problems in different states, like you mentioned. But as an overall structure, we did pretty well in the Affordable Care Act. Again, it's not perfect, but it's pretty good, and it's been functioning without major modifications to help it. Or even minor tweaks that you would normally have. So I think, you know, the premise of the question that it's that President Trump says it's collapsing, it's in a death spiral, that's just factually wrong, and the facts matter here.
Jonathan, let me go back to you. There's talk of repeal and replace. That's been, as I said, a kind of a mantra for the Republicans over the last 7 years. But now the talk is just repeal. Let's assume that the Republicans have enough votes to repeal the Affordable Care Act. What are we left with?
So, I mean, to be clear, we have no idea where this debate is going. And I don't think leaders really know where this debate is going. They have, I mean, literally within hour, you know, minutes of each other yesterday, you could talk to different senators and some would say, well, you know, we're going to repeal and replace. No, we're going to repeal. Well, we don't really know. We're going to see, you know, what bill we can get 50 behind. And that's really what this is going to be. Whatever. At this point, they just want to pass something.
And this is a vote to vote, right? It's a procedural
right.
Vote.
Today, yeah, Tuesday's vote is a vote to begin a sort of the process of, you know, a sort of time-limited debate and then get to a vote. But what you were asking, you know, what does it mean just to repeal the law?
Right.
This is important. They are trying to – they can't actually fully repeal the law because that would take 60 votes under normal Senate procedures. Remember, the Democrats actually – people forget, but the Affordable Care Act actually did pass with 60 votes in the Senate. They made some minor tweaks to it later through a different process, but they got 60 votes. And that in order – Republicans don't have 60 seats. They have 52. So they're using what's called the budget reconciliation process, which has these special rules and you can't have a filibuster. And that means they can get a bill through with just 50 votes and then, you know, Vice President Pence would break the tie. But there's a lot of – you know, in order to get that privileged treatment, to get that sort of, you know, immunity from a Senate filibuster, they have to stay within certain guidelines. The legislation can't go – there are certain things that can be in the legislation. There are certain things that cannot. And they really can't change a lot of directly, at least. They are limited in their ability to change a lot of the regulations that the Affordable Care Act introduced because, again, given the special rules for this. So really, they really mostly have to play with the money in the bill. So what they would be able to do is they basically – the easiest way to think about it is they're basically going to strip all the money out of the bill, you know, if they do just this – just repeal with no replace, right? They'll take away the money that people are now getting for tax credits. They'll take away the money that states are using to expand their Medicaid program. Now, obviously, the biggest impact is that just takes away a bunch of money that's helping people to get health insurance. So, you know, people who, you know, years ago or today couldn't afford in coverage without that money, they're stuck. But in addition to that, because those regulations will stay in place, you get a really weird set of effects on the insurance market. Insurers will be in a position where they have to sell to anybody, regardless of pre-existing condition. But people are free to not get it when they want, again, because of the specifics of this legislation. You end up with a situation where everybody who is sort of buying coverage on their own is now in trouble because the people who can't afford it without tax subsidies, without tax credits, they're losing their assistance. And meanwhile, insurers reacting to this weird world are going to have to jack up their prices. So, you know, when the Congressional Budget Office looked at a bill like this, they concluded the number of people who would lose insurance, you know, could be as high as 30 million people. That's astounding. And that is actually a possibility on the table right now. That is a bill that, you know, at various points in the last week, we have heard Senator Mitch McConnell and President Donald Trump say, yeah, this is what we should pass.
We're going to take a very short break and get back to our conversation with Jonathan Cohn and Zeke Emanuel. We are talking about healthcare politics and policy. There is a vote today in the Senate, and you can join us at 1-888-477-9499. Much more after this short break. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. We are talking about a vote in the Senate today to begin discussion to repeal the Affordable Care Act, what that could mean, what letting Obamacare fail could mean for the future of health care in America, and what the Republicans are proposing. Talking with Zeke Emanuel, one of the architects of the Affordable Care Act. He also is a professor at the University of Pennsylvania. And he actually met with Trump during the repeal process, which I do want to talk to him about. Also with us, Huffington Post reporter Jonathan Cohn, who writes about healthcare policy. And again, you can join our conversation by calling us at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Let me play Senator Susan Collins. She was interviewed on This Week, ABC's This Week, and this was on July 16th.
This bill would make sweeping and deep cuts in the Medicaid program, which has been a safety net program on the books for more than 50 years, ensuring that some of our most vulnerable citizens, our disabled children, our low-income seniors receive the health care that they need. It would also jeopardize the very existence of our rural hospitals and our nursing homes, which not only provide essential care to people in rural America, but also are major employers in the small communities in which they are located. And worst of all, these changes would be made without the Senate having held a single hearing to evaluate their impact.
Zeke, you want to respond to that, what Senator Collins just said?
No, she just said the truth, which is, I mean, this is the most strange bill, and the contradictions, you know, Republicans complained in the Affordable Care Act they didn't have enough time, there weren't enough hearings. Now they have literally no hearings. They complained that it was done behind closed doors, which was patently false. Now they actually, Mitch McConnell takes 13 senators and makes a bill behind closed doors. No women were involved. No minorities were involved. She's absolutely right. It's total hypocrisy. And the thing which gets me is, you're really going to vote to take away health insurance from 22 million people? Mm. And let's add on one other layer of hypocrisy. One of their own senators, Senator McCain, tens of thousands, maybe even hundreds of thousands of healthcare spending for his brain cancer is a very good emblem of what we're trying to do. Cover anyone in America if, God forbid, they got brain cancer like Senator McCain. The notion that one of their own colleagues, and everyone's talking about his health and the sadness of it, but, you know, he can only get health care, not because he can't write a check to cover those kinds of bills. Very few people in America, except the 1%, could write a check to cover those kind of bills. That's why we have health insurance. And yet they're going to vote to take away health insurance for almost 10% of the American population. It seems outrageous to me that people would think this is possible. And let me remind your listeners one other thing. When President Trump understood what was in the House bill, he himself characterized it as mean. He said, it's mean, mean, mean. Again, the notion that the Senate is going to vote, we were told the Senate was going to make the House bill softer. They have done nothing of the sort. Mm. And the Cruz Amendment, if anything, makes it worse because it really does strip the no pre-existing condition exclusion out of the bill. It's a terrible insult to the American population. And I think Jonathan made a very good point. They really don't care what they pass. I mean, this isn't about policy. This isn't about doing something good for America. They just want to pass something for the Republican base, not for the American population. And that seems like a bad way of going about doing what's right for the country. And I think Susan Collins hit it on the head. You know, repealing Medicaid, or basically rolling back Medicaid, that's been a safety net for poor people, is one of the things they want to do, and it immediately undermines a lot of services, especially for the working poor in this country. And a lot of those people were paradoxically Trump supporters. So they're going to hurt the very people who voted for Donald Trump. Makes no sense to me.
Well, and Jonathan, let me toss something to you and also quote from Senator John Kasich of Ohio. He's a Republican, of course.
Governor Kasich.
Yes, Governor Kasich. Thank you very much, because there was a governor's meeting. The vice president was there, and Kasich is quoted as saying, in our state, many people on the Medicaid expansion are on the program for a year and a half until they get a job. They're not on it for 20 years. They are not lazy or committing fraud. And it seems that the governor's, not all of them, but the governors and Medicaid have become a very powerful voice in this debate, Jonathan.
They have. You know, for the governors, this is not abstract. This is what they do. They are on the front lines of this. They're the ones dealing with the budgets. They know what it requires to pay not just for Medicaid, but for uncompensated care, for other services. And they're seeing the impact. You know, Ohio is such an interesting case, right? Because here you have Kasich, who's a Republican. He ran for president and became has become an outspoken defender of the Medicaid expansion, partly on moral grounds. You know, you listen to him and he says, look, you know, if we're, you know, we want to take care of people. We don't, you know, these are people who need the help, but also on practical grounds. And what he says is true. You know, you hear from the Republicans, Medicaid is a failed program. And, you know, it's like any other large government program. There are lots of places where you look at it and say, this could work better, this isn't working well. But overall, the data on Medicaid is that it improves financial security. It does exactly what Governor Kasich said, which is that it helps people to find jobs. I mean, there's this idea that, you know, it's subsidizing lazy people. And certainly there are people who are unemployed. It's like any other welfare program in that sense. But it is also the case that most people on Medicaid are either in, you know, working families with someone who works, or they are looking for jobs, or they are going to school, or obviously, you know, they're children or they're disabled. We know Medicaid works. We know that it gets people better access to health care. It protects them financially. And there's a lot of evidence, although it's a little more ambiguous, that they end up healthier for it. So we have this program that has done an enormous amount of good, that in states like Ohio is a lifeline for people. But, you know, generally, particularly in states with opioid crises now, and there is really no reason to go in there and say this needs to be torn apart unless, you know, you're, say, the Speaker of the House, and you can remember that back when you were in college, you used to talk about, gee, you can't wait to sort of get in there and do something to limit Medicaid and shrink it because I think that program is too big, which is something that famously Speaker Ryan had said. So, I mean, there's no reason to get into Medicaid and start peeling this back unless you just don't like the program. It's not failing. It's not causing massive problems. It's doing what it's supposed to do, and it is doing it well.
Let me get Judith from New Jersey to join our conversation. Hi, Judith. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes. Thanks for taking my call, Marty.
Welcome.
I just wanted to point out, last year my son, as an independent carpenter, had an insurance with the through the Blue Cross Blue Shield, and it was not Obamacare, not Affordable Care. He was paying $557 a month. He's a single guy. His out of pocket was $6,850. It wasn't a problem because he's a healthy guy, whatever. Then he was diagnosed with stage 4 prostate cancer. He, with the help of social service, was able to get on Medicaid. This is his only lifeline for treatment. His outlook is very bleak. We are scared to death that they are going to change this coverage, that he will be unable to continue with his treatment. And what is left for people to do in this situation? Suicide? This is totally crazy and so, just so wrong, so cruel.
Well, Judith, I hope first of all, I appreciate you calling in to Radio Times, and I hope suicide is not an option. But let me give you a chance to hear what Zeke Emanuel has to say about this. Zeke, what do you say to Judith?
I think these are the kind of stories I hear all the time. These are exactly the kind of tragedies that the Affordable Care Act was put in place to combat. People who don't have health insurance, who get a serious illness, they need health care. Their costs shouldn't be shared by everyone else. They need insurance, and Medicaid for many tens of millions of people is the way to get that coverage. Yeah. And I can tell you this story, a version of it, you know, I couldn't go to the doctor because I couldn't afford it. I got, you know, health insurance either through the exchange or through Medicaid from the Affordable Care Act, and I was able to get health care, and it saved me in various ways. One person came up to me once in Chicago and said, you know, my friend got a heart transplant because they were able to get Medicaid coverage through the Affordable Care Act. This is life-saving, literally, for people. And the notion that it's going to be taken away, you know, one of the things I point out today in an op-ed I have in USA Today is, look, freedom from worrying that you won't be able to pay for health care is one of the things the Affordable Care Act gave to average Americans. That's a very important benefit that we, I think, upper middle class people tend to forget. Not worrying is very important. Reducing stress. And we know, by the way, from actual serious studies that giving people Medicaid does reduce their stress, does reduce their financial risk of becoming bankrupt, because it covers medical bills. So I think this this story is a classic case of why the Affordable Care Act was enacted and why it should not be repealed by the Republicans.
Judith, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. See, going back to the piece that I have in my hands here, your op-ed in USA Today, you talk about how insurance works. And if it's about health insurance, it's essentially healthy people subsidizing sick people like Senator John McCain. But you also say near the end of this piece that there are really just two choices. One is to keep the Obamacare approach. The other one is the Medicare, not Medicaid, but Medicare approach. The government provides all Americans with a minimal health insurance package, and they buy coverage for additional services, such as drug coverage at subsidized rates. You think that's the choice, keep Obamacare, or go for what, Medicare for all?
No, it's not Medicare for all. My notion is that it's a sort of auto-enrollment in a basic package where people could supplement it. You know, the Republicans have an approach which Jonathan Cohen mentioned was thrown out by the parliamentarian that can't be part of this repeal bill no matter what, which is, well, if you don't buy insurance, you have to wait 6 months before you can get it again. That sort of delay is something that we know, I mean, it's been tried. It's not terribly effective, especially for young people who don't imagine themselves getting sick. So the only two really effective ways to get close to 100% coverage in the United States are either a mandate like we have in the Affordable Care Act or this other version of auto-enrolling people for the equivalent of the subsidy in a basic package. I think, you know, either one will work pretty well, and I think we shouldn't fool ourselves that if we're going to get healthy people in, they have to somehow be gotten in either by a mandate or by this auto-enrollment process. That's just the nature of the insurance market. If you want to cover people who are sick, you're going to have healthy people whose chance of using the health care is just very low.
Well, Jonathan, anytime we do a program about how to improve, reform our health care system, the issue of either Medicare for all or single payer comes up. Do those ideas have any traction, do you think?
So, I mean, single payer systems, and everybody defines them a little differently. But, you know, broadly speaking, having the government be the main insurer for most of the population is an idea that works quite well in other countries. And certainly if you could imagine a world where we had such a system in place here in the United States, I'm willing to virtually guarantee it would be light years better than what we have ever had or have now. The catch is always, how do you get there politically, and how do you get there as a practical standpoint? Because you'd have to really truly rip out the entire healthcare financing system and put something in place, and that is not an easy thing to do. That's not to say we couldn't get there eventually, and I think if we ever get past this repeal debate, we will start to see, I think, a conversation about, you know, how is that a goal we could get to? How do we get there or not? But that to me is a something for down the road. It is not something that's going to happen right now. It's not the conversation right now. And I think it's telling, I think, that Bernie Sanders, who is as a very prominent champion of single payer and who has been out there and to his credit for a long, long time and made it part of his, you know, presidential bid in 2016, has said this explicitly, which is that as a champion of single payer, someone who believes it down to his bones, right now the most important task for him and for people who think like he does is to stop repeal, to keep the Affordable Care Act in place, to make sure those gains don't slip away, ideally to improve it, while still, you know, from his standpoint and for his supporters, still, you know, working, thinking ahead to, okay, and then once that's done, how do we get to single payer?
And I know, Zeke, you have to leave us in a couple of minutes. Let me read an email from Linda. She says, the Affordable Care Act is about health insurance, not health care. Having health insurance does not equate with health care. Do you agree with her?
That's certainly true. We know that health insurance, the main goal of health insurance is to protect people from financial risk, to make it easier for them to get health services. But we also know that there's a lot of other elements that go along to getting good health care and actually getting improvements in your health. Health insurance is a necessary first step, but it's not sufficient. And many of us who are, you know, concerned about this are concerned about other things we need to do to make sure people really do get the kind of services and the care they need. You know, part of my book, Prescription for the Future, is about the kinds of things the health delivery system, doctors and hospitals and home health care agencies can do to improve the health care people get. And I think most importantly going forward and is, you know, we really need to focus on prevention of all sorts. Prevention for healthy people in terms of vaccines and screening tests. Prevention for people who have illness like diabetes and congestive heart failure to prevent them from getting sicker. That kind of prevention, preventing people with serious illness from getting sicker, is really critical to improving the quality of the system and decreasing the cost. And that, you know, is made possible by health insurance, but much more needs to be done in the system. We need to change the mentality of doctors and change the mentality of hospitals, not just to treat people when they get sick, but to try to keep them healthy. The Affordable Care Act began some of that process. We need a lot more push on it. And I would say that, you know, over the next decade, that's really got to be where our focus is, on the health care and the caring, and not just on the hopefully we can get past this insurance debate once the Republican bill goes down to defeat, and focus in on the, you know, how do we transform how we actually deliver care to people to make sure they get the right care at the right time, not unnecessary care, and make it more efficient so that it's actually cheaper and those deductibles and premiums can go down.
And is there a 30-second answer to why our healthcare system is so expensive, Zeke?
Yeah. Yes, there is a 30-second answer. A lot of unnecessary care, about $200 billion worth, inefficiently delivered care where you could do it to get the same care more cheaply. And then, as everyone who buys drugs knows, high prices for a lot of our medical services. And then there's some, you know, big element of fraud. You take those four things and you're pretty close to $500 million of savings, $500 trillion, excuse me, $500 billion in savings. So if you wanted to know how to reduce premiums, how to reduce deductibles, unnecessary care, inefficiently delivered care, high prices, and fraud, and those four things, we can't solve all of them, but we could seriously reduce the costs by addressing
Zeke Emanuel, thank you for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thank you. My very great honor to be with you again, Marty.
Thanks. Jonathan Cohn staying with us. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia, and I'm talking with Jonathan Cohn. He's senior national correspondent for the Huffington Post. He covers healthcare, social welfare, and politics. Wrote a book a couple of years ago called Sick, and we are talking about our healthcare system, efforts to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act. Let me play a clip, and this is New Jersey Representative Tom MacArthur. This goes back to May 10th. He's speaking to an angry crowd at a town hall meeting about health care.
I am watching an insurance market that is collapsing, and here's why it's collapsing.
Hold it! Because you have
undermined. Here.
So, Jonathan, if we roll back the clock, you know, 6, 7, maybe even 8 years ago, town hall meetings, people very angry, outspoken about the Affordable Care Act. This is an issue that really gets people riled up.
It does, and it's very personal, and it involves some of the most profound, intimate decisions, you know, you make as a human being, right? I mean, this is, anybody who has ever experienced through a loved one, a friend, or themselves a serious illness knows how incredibly frightening that can be. And people feel strongly about it. They should feel strongly about it. I think the emotion you are seeing today is a reminder of just how much taking away health insurance from people would really mean. I mean, the stories you hear today from people who have gotten health insurance through the Affordable Care Act. I hear them all the time. I've written about many of them. Just, you know, Zeke, just like Zeke said, he has heard. And all reporters like me who do this, they are everywhere. You know, it's a woman in California I met who is battling stage 3 ovarian cancer, and she gets her insurance through the Affordable Care Act. And she worries that if repeal took effect, she would blow through. You know, her bills are so high, she would surely blow through an annual limit on her benefits, which used to be very common in health insurance policies, but is now against the law because of the Affordable Care Act. You know, I've met a young man in Ohio, a remarkable young man who's he's a sophomore at Kenyon College, and he has cerebral palsy, but he is at college on his own studying, and is Medicaid that makes that possible. If the program gets cut, it's quite likely he would lose access to the services that make it possible for him to live at college. You know, the Affordable Care Act is a it's got its ups and downs, and there are surely people who have for whom it has not worked out well. There are people very unhappy with their coverage. A lot of people who remember what they had before and say, wait a minute, used to be better. But there is no question the net effect of the law has been to improve access and to make those stories less common. And when you talk about repealing the law, you are talking about putting more people in that position again where they are vulnerable, where they have to worry about that, where they're not only faced with disease, but the prospect they can't pay their bills and might not get the care they need.
Let me read a bunch of tweets and comments here, and then we'll get Meg from Westchester to join us. A tweet from David: a brilliant idea would be to require all government employees and members of Congress to take the plan that they come up with. Another tweet: someone in Arizona tweeted that her husband had the same brain tumor as Senator John McCain. They contacted McCain's office for assistance. He advised them to move out of Arizona. A tweet from Victoria: someone with cancer, I find it unconscionable that McCain flew back to strip health care from 32 million people with the hashtag repeal the vote. A tweet from another tweet says the GOP owns healthcare now and into the future. An email from Eric: what, if anything, does the ACA do to lower health insurance costs? I'm getting a free ride on the ACA, but I've seen huge increases in the premiums for my insurance between when I paid premiums out of pocket and now, and it's taxpayers who are paying the premiums. Let me get Meg from Westchester to join our conversation. Meg, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
My question has to do with the market reforms dealing with the for-profit health insurance companies, at pharmacies. These companies are making millions, if not billions, of dollars a year. And I listened to Judith talking about her son. I don't understand how we can talk about reforming insurance or making insurance affordable when they're for-profit insurance companies making really billions of dollars a year. And I'd love to get some information and be educated on that point.
It's a good point. I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Meg, Jonathan, can you take that? It's a big one.
Yeah, sure, sure. So, I mean, there's a couple levels on that. I mean, in general, I think the idea that profits and healthcare don't mix well there's a lot of truth to that. And if you look abroad, certainly you either have the best systems or the ones where either government provides insurance directly or it provides it, you know, where they provide it through private insurers. The private insurers either are nonprofit or they cannot at least make a – they're prohibited from making a profit on the basic insurance package. You know, they can sell supplemental policies and try to make profit there. Mm-hmm. So as an ideal, as a kind of where you want to go with all of this, I mean, there's a strong case that, you know, kind of wringing the profits out of healthcare, out of the insurance industry at least, there's some gain there. I do think it's important to realize that when we talk about why healthcare is so expensive in this country, insurance company profits are not probably a very big factor in that.
Really?
Yeah, no. I mean, if you want to know why do we pay? You were asking earlier, why do we pay so much for healthcare? Well, there's a lot of reasons, but probably the biggest reason is the prices we pay for services are very high. You know, what we pay for hospital services, what we pay for prescription drugs, what we pay for physicians. That is a not an easy problem politically to solve, and practically it's not easy to solve quickly because, you know, you have an entire economy now built around these prices. But, you know, we just pay much higher prices than they do in other countries, largely because in those other countries, the government sets the prices. We don't do that here, or at least we don't do it in nearly the scale those other countries do. So insurance profits, you know, that's a place to go potentially. You know, you can make a very good solid case that, you know, getting profits out of insurance companies might yield some benefit. And if you look at the insurers that are doing well right now out there, you know, that are making the new marketplaces work, a lot of them are the smaller nonprofit insurers. But at the end of the day, that's not going to, you know, getting the profit out of health insurance will not by itself solve the problems of the healthcare system. It's a much bigger problem that has to do with the prices we're paying for services, also has to do with waste, also has to do with the way we deliver care in a way that's just not that efficient. But again, these are big problems that require both political power to overcome and also time.
Meg, thanks for the call to Radio Times. And you can call us as well, 1-888-477-9499. Zeke Emanuel was talking about the mandate, and that's really a centerpiece of the Affordable Care Act. The idea is that you get everyone some kind of insurance, hopefully young and healthy people that can help pay for their grandmom or their mom or their dad or their uncle who needs care because they have become ill. But what's so interesting, Jonathan, the mandate was a Republican idea, as I understand it. If you go back to the 1990s, that was what Republicans were talking about in terms of trying to wrestle with our expensive healthcare system and certainly insurance.
Yeah, it's really one of the many crazy elements of this whole saga. Is that, you know, the idea of a mandate evolved in part because there were people who wanted to get to universal health care, or at least said they wanted to get to universal health care, but they did not want to have a single-payer system, right? They didn't want to have the government just insure everybody. So you have to do that through private insurance, and you cannot make a private health insurance system work if there's not some penalty or incentive to get healthy people to buy the coverage. You know, it was funny. Just the other day, I was actually looking back at the history, and I'd sort of forgotten about this. But, you know, Mitt Romney, when he was governor of Massachusetts, right, signs into law a system that's the prototype for the Affordable Care Act, and it has a mandate. And, you know, he didn't just sign that law. He was like an enthusiastic proponent of the mandate. And what was so interesting was that he sold it as a conservative. He called it the ultimate conservative idea. I think that's the quote. I might have the word wrong there. But, you know, as this ultimate conservative concept, because he said it was an example of personal responsibility. And his argument was, look, if you show up in the emergency room and you need life-saving care, we're going to give it to you. And you never know if you're going to be that person who needs the care. So if you could pay for health insurance and you're not doing it, that means that when you show up at the emergency room, we, society, have to pay for it. And that's not right. It is your responsibility to contribute towards the cost of healthcare because you never know if you're the person who might need it. And that is an individual responsibility, a conservative concept. And yet, as any health economist would tell you, absolutely correct, as a matter of fact, that, you know, if you don't get health insurance and then you show up in the emergency room and you need life-saving care and it's given to you, then, you know, you are in effect transferring that cost to other people. And it's funny, that was a conservative argument. Yeah. Republicans supported that until the day that, you know, Democrats decided, okay, we're going to do this. And then suddenly, for whatever strange reason, Republicans decided they didn't like the idea.
Because anymore. It's about politics? I mean, now it's just sheer politics as opposed to policy?
I do. I really do. And I think, you know, look, I mean, I think a lot of, you know, there's so much, I mean, the debates become so clouded by, you know, different perceptions of what it does and doesn't do. I'm willing to believe a lot of Republicans, you know, came into this, you know, I don't think a lot of Republicans, frankly, gave a lot of thought to healthcare except that, oh, Obamacare's terrible, we need to repeal it. And they kind of walked into this year. This, you know, after the election saying, okay, we're going to repeal it. One of the things that happens is there, now there is this realization, oh, wait a minute, there are millions of people getting coverage through it. A lot of them like it. I think the reason this thing is being propelled forward, a big reason, is just this drive to take away a law that's got Obama's name on it, that was a Democratic measure, and that they have promised their most conservative supporters that they would get rid of. And it's at this point, it's just had that momentum, the need to do something that gets rid of Obamacare, you know, and bold and put the word Obama in bold type. That is what is pushing this forward. Not, you know, it's becoming more and more divorced from any real policy goal. Again, I don't even think they care that much at this point what the bill does, at least the leaders. Donald Trump certainly doesn't seem to. He'll sign anything. You know, I'll sign repeal and replace. I'll sign a repeal bill. I don't care. I just want to win. But they want that victory. They want to say they toppled Obamacare. And that is – they are so determined to do that, they don't seem to mind the fact that 20, 30 million people might lose health insurance as a result.
Let me get Marie joining us from Allentown. Marie, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty. Hi. Thanks for doing this program.
Oh, sure.
I just wanted – go ahead. I just wanted to make a comment about being on the exchange for health insurance. My husband lost his job twice within the past, I think, 5 years it's been. And the first time we signed up with COBRA. We investigated a number of insurances, and it's interesting how close some of those insurances came to the cost of COBRA at that time, which COBRA is very expensive.
Sure.
We were looking at a bill at $1,100 a month for health care.
Wow.
When he lost his job the second time, we decided to look into the exchange. And we ended up with a bill of $276 a month for health care. The thing that I want to say about the exchange that I don't hear a lot being said is the exchange from the moment we called until the moment that my husband got another job and we were able to go off of the exchange, the customer service is excellent. People will walk you through the process. They walked me through the process. I've dealt with a lot of health care in the past, but I never dealt with this before. Bending over backwards to help you understand what you can get, how to go about it, analyze, do you have more need, like, say, for a hospital or doctor?
Sure. You know, Marie, first of all, I appreciate the call to Radio Times.
Sure.
I'm glad you had a good experience.
Yes.
It sounds like your husband is working again, so that's good news as well. And I'm jumping in here only because we just have a couple of minutes before we have to say goodbye to our guests, but I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Jonathan, I'm curious, with all the uncertainty, and we talked a little bit about the healthcare marketplace, how does a marketplace, and it is, you know, largely for profit, how do they respond? How are they reacting to the threats to the system as it exists, you know, warts and all?
Badly.
Badly.
Badly. I mean, you know, again, as Zeke Emanuel was saying earlier, the markets in some parts of the country have worked well from almost from day one. In some parts of the country, they've really struggled. But all the data indicates that they have been stabilizing on the whole. And, you know, there were still some problem areas, but the trajectory was good, right? Things were improving. And now comes the Trump administration, and they have – number one, there's this uncertainty hanging over, like, what is this law going to look like? Is it going to be around in a year or 5 years? What are they going to change? But the Trump administration, in managing it, has made very clear they have zero interest in sort of managing it effectively. They've cut – they just announced they were firing – you know, they were closing down some of the offices that staffed call centers to help people enroll. They're not going to enforce the individual mandate aggressively. They have, and most ominously, they've threatened insurance companies to – they've said they're going to withhold these special payments that insurance companies have been getting as part of the system to help them stabilize their finances. And the combination has totally spooked the insurers. And insurers have come out and said – they said, you know, announcing next year's rates, they – you know, after a couple years – many of them had to raise rates in the past couple years because they started too low, they realized. But they'd gotten to a place where they felt pretty good about it. Now they're saying, nope, we're going to have to raise them again. And it's not because the system doesn't work. It's not because we don't think we can make money on this. It's because we don't trust that the Trump administration – is going to manage this effectively. We have to account for the fact that they're not going to be signing people up. They're not going to be enforcing the mandate. And they're not going to be sort of paying the money that insurance companies were told they would be getting. And so they are raising rates, and some of them are just going to abandon the market altogether. So we are in effect – it is fair to say that right now the Trump administration is at best neglecting the system and at worst actively sabotaging it, which is really quite remarkable when you think about it. That, you know, look,
Jonathan, we got to end our conversation. They're
okay.
Playing my song, and I hate to interrupt you there. Thanks so much for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Jonathan Cohn, senior national correspondent for the Huffington Post, where he covers healthcare, social welfare, and politics. And we appreciate all those phone calls, all the comments to Radio Times as well. Adam Stanishevsky, our engineer today, the show produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Trinae Nuri. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Thank you so much for joining us.